This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 151. Thank you all for returning to us on this wonderful day of the 15th of April. I'm here with my co-host, the brilliant Henry Viola Hare, and my name is Peter Higgins. We were at the Master Investor Show on the 29th of March, and then we put that podcast live recording at Master Investor Show out as our 150th pod. Henry had a fantastic time, didn't you, Henry,
at the Master Investor Show? I really did, Peter. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Inundated with questions, inundated with fans from all over the world and all over the UK. And we delivered a pod. What we're talking about, how to find winning stocks. And we had a wonderful time there. So a big thank you to all the ShareScope team, all the Master Investor Show team, that helped us on that day. And thank you all of you that came to see us. I want to give a shout out to Paul Edenbrow, at Trader Mark, at PatCat68. Ian, forget his Twitter handle. Yeah, forget his Twitter handle. Who else was there? Quite a few other people came, didn't they, see us, especially that we know?
Oh, there were masses, absolutely masses. I mean, I walked in through the door, and almost as soon as I'd walked in, somebody collared me and went, "Oh, Henry, I'm coming to see you later." It was fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. No, so thank you all, ladies and gents, ever so much for coming to see us there. We were absolutely bowled over by your support. Brilliant to smash the 150 milestone on a live stage in front of all of you. We had a wonderful day. I want to also give a big shout out to our competition winner, because we had a situation where the team had put it up. So we were giving out a bundle of books and 6 months subscription, and Perry Rumble won that particular bundle of 8 books and 6 months subscription. So if you're listening to this pod, Perry, congratulations. We look forward to hearing from you and hearing from you how much you enjoy those books and your subscription to the award-winning platform that is ShareScope. Henry, we've got to move into slightly happier tides, mate, I think. We're going to have to talk a little bit about the Orange Swan event, otherwise known as Trump's tariffs.
Hold on, that's supposed to be my phrase, Tori.
I read that somewhere else, mate. The Orange Swan event. You can chuckle. Brutal. It wasn't my idea.
It's unbelievable. I mean, you just don't know whether you're coming or going these days. Every day I wake up and I you know, I'm almost scared to look at the headlines, because there is just so much going on in the news, so much going on in the world. Markets are skyrocketing one day, collapsing the next, skyrocketing again the day after. We've had tariffs, we've had trade deals, we've had, you know, talks about annexing various countries, all sorts of absolutely, as you say, black swan events that really ought to be sort of an inconceivable event. And we're almost getting 3 or 4 of them a week now. And so I don't know about you, but certainly I almost feel completely burned out with the whole thing. You know, it's you just can't keep up. There's so much going on.
It is a moving feast, mate. It is a moving feast. And I think, unfortunately, I'm looking back at this data here now, and it feels like it was an April's Fool, 1st of April. FTSE 100 sitting at 8,650. Then we go fast forward to the beginnings of President Trump coming out and saying what he was saying about tariffs being at such a percent, and then tariffs being at another percent. And backwards and forwards. 7th of April, Henry, yeah, beginnings of the ISA season. The FTSE 100 sitting at 7,600. So a full 1,000-point move on the FTSE, which is quite significant for our little FTSE. We've had 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10% movements on the S&P 500 and the Dow. and so on and so forth in that time. So we've gone from 8,650 down to 7,650 or 7,600 or sub 7,600. And we're currently sitting at 8,249 today, another positive day today. But it's been really, really volatile, the markets. And like you say, most people don't know what to do, and there's lots of uncertainty. The main thing that's happened, I think the highest traded asset in the world, the US 10-year Treasury bond market, essentially put a curb on some of the volatility last week. And as some commentators saying, President Trump flinched when he saw that creaking and what could happen to the markets regarding, recessionary measures, and the markets actually turned rolling over. And they were rising and rising and rising, and eventually had to come out and say, oh, we're going to do a pause. 90-day pause? You hear the conversation about 90-day pause?
Well, I think for every country
except China.
For some of our listeners that maybe aren't up to speed with the mechanics of the bond market, what we say by the markets rose and rose and rose isn't so much that the price of the bonds rose. The price of the bonds didn't rise at all. The yields rose.
The yield on the bonds were rising.
And the cost of American debt, as we all know, America is accruing trillions of dollars of debt. I think they're at something like $34 trillion borrowed now. It's unbelievable to think about. And the cost of that debt is effectively the yield of the bonds that they issue to the market. And those yields are going up and up and up. Investors are demanding more and more money to lend to America. And at a certain point, that becomes completely unaffordable for the US government. And I think this is what happened. I think President Trump was probably wheeled into a room and somebody went, if you do this again for another week, we're going to be bankrupt. There is going to be no 47th presidency or whatever he is, we'll all be out on the street.
So the stats I've got here, the 10-year Treasury yield touched upon, surged to 4.569. I'm not sure if it's gone up above that from the last time I got this data out.
I think it went higher.
Might have done, marking its largest weekly increase since 1981. That's how far back we're going. And analysts described that as the perfect storm, with inflation concerns and foreign investors' behavior contributing to that volatility. So, yeah, be mindful of that. Be very mindful to keep an eye on the 10-year Treasury yield as a measure of how bad things are. If you think the market's bottomed, you want to be seeing a 10-year yield below 4.2, maybe even 4%. And then we can go.
Well, also, you want to see persistent falls in that yield. Effectively, what people say is that when you've got two modes that the market has, risk on and risk off. A risk on market, everybody wants to go and buy speculative, high yield type stuff, right? Because they think it's going to go to the moon tomorrow. Go and buy your company that's got no profit but massive revenue growth. In a risk off market, nobody wants to go near those. They want to buy what they perceive to be safe assets. So things like gold or things like bonds. Traditionally speaking, the US government has been seen as a AAA rated borrower. It will never, ever, ever, ever default. And so everybody goes piling into bonds. But when you're in a situation where, as we are now, where the stock market is collapsing, and the bond market is collapsing and yields are skyrocketing, this really shows just how terrified international markets are of what's going on. They're not going from equities into bonds. They're coming out of equities. They're coming out of bonds. They're coming out of everything. And a good friend of ours often says, when risk spikes, all tail risks correlate. Everything, becomes perfectly correlated. Everything gets sold off together. And this is sort of leading into quite nicely the theme of our episode for today, which is all about what to do when the markets become so volatile. Where do you go when volatility is through the roof and risk is everywhere?
Absolutely, because you've got basically the hedge funds and the asset managers were offloading the bonds, Henry. Yeah, even to the point where some of them and some entities were cashing in the gold to address margin calls. That's how bad it was going, because they had a couple of days where even the gold price dipped because they had to to margin call and sell, liquidate some of their assets that they had regarding gold. So absolutely perfect, perfect, perfect storm. So looking for safe havens. Yeah. Where do you want to start, Henry, regarding safe havens? Let me just throw this quote out here that I pulled up earlier. I like my little psychology quotes because this is about us all staying calm, all right? And this is from one of my favorite authors, Henry, okay? Seth Klarman. While some might mistakenly consider value investing a mechanical tool for identifying bargains, it is actually a comprehensive investment philosophy that emphasizes the need to perform in-depth fundamental analysis, pursue long-term investment results, limit risk, and most importantly, folks, resist crowd psychology. Don't follow the herd. Since so many people saying, I'm 80% cash. Oh, I'm 70% cash. I'm 90% cash. I'm going, right, cool. How much can you compound that in the next 2 years, 3 years? And then we're now up from, we're nearly up 10% from where we were from the lows.
Last week.
In a week. And I'm going, are you back in the market yet? No. Or are you going to wait for it to get to 8,500 again then? Or are you going to be back in the market if it falls back at 7,000? You know, if you're that worried, go to cash. You've got to do what you need to do individually. But you can also pound cost average into the market if you're that worried. You know? Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway.
This is the thing. I mean, just before you and I came on air, there was something I was saying about psychology of investing in psychology management. And I've had a lot of our audience write in and message me and, you know, what are you doing? What are your thoughts? What have you seen in the market? How are you responding? And to be honest, I'm not really responding any differently this week to how I was last week. I'm still looking for good quality businesses. They're slightly cheaper this week than they were last week, which is good for me. But the point I made to you is that if you've got a portfolio that is set up to respond to the events of this week, you're probably not set up to respond to the events of next week or next month or next year. You know, if you think about the last 10 years, we've had the Brexit vote, which has created markets. We had Jeremy Corbyn threatening to nationalize all the industries, which created markets. We've had Donald Trump elected twice. We've had riots in the White House. We've had the Russia war, we've had the Israel war, we've had COVID, we've had a global shutdown, we've had Liz Truss crashing the bond market. These are just some of the events. Oh, in fact, actually, you could go on, couldn't you? You've had the Chinese real estate crisis. Don't forget Evergrande and the world stock market was panicking on that one.
Absolutely, so, mate.
You've had all of these events, and at the time, they're very real. They're very, very pungent. There is someone here with an axe coming to get you and your portfolio, right? They want to get you. And that's how it feels.
No, they don't, folks. They don't want to come and get you. Don't listen to what Henry's saying.
This is my point.
Let me interject and put some measure on this. I'm going to quote our wonderful former guest, right? Just recent guest, 149 podcast, Annabelle Brody Smith. And she encapsulates what Henry is saying here, right? Without using an axe and you having to go tonight to bed thinking that someone's coming after you, right? Oh my gosh. If a week is a long time in politics, 2 weeks feels like a lifetime for markets. Trump's tariffs have caused a whirlwind of uncertainty, but investment trusts have seen it all before. Trump's tariffs are one more experience for investment trusts to add to the world wars, the Great Depression, high inflation of the 1970s, Black Monday, the tech bust, the financial crisis, and the pandemic, and the trusts are still going strong today. I think that's what you're trying to say, Henry, wasn't it?
That is exact. That's a far more eloquent way of me scripting my next horror film, ladies and gents.
Spooking people.
But this is the thing, you know, seeing it, you want to have a portfolio that is resilient to events. You want to have a psychology that is resilient to events. The world is going to be the world. It'll be a chaotic, confusing, disruptive place, right? And you've got to operate within that. So have a portfolio that enables you to sleep soundly at night. And that's what we're focusing on in today's episode, really. Characteristics of companies or types of companies that you might be able to go away and research, that you might want to go and invest in, that are high quality, that will not suddenly you know, have hugely volatile swings when volatility occurs in the outside world. Doesn't mean that they're never going to respond to anything, but they're less likely to fall off a cliff than some others. Now, in the jargon of the market, these are often businesses that are called non-cyclical or counter-cyclical. And effectively, this is referring to the idea of an economic cycle. So when the economy is not doing so well, or when people's moods dip, and people's moods always dip, the economy always has downturns. These businesses have stronger price resilience. So their share prices hold up better. They don't fall off a cliff in the way that other more speculative businesses or more cyclical businesses tend to do. They tend to have high operating margins, which enable them to have earnings resilience. They have strong returns on capital employed. They've got high interest rate coverage. If they borrow at all, they're able to afford it comfortably. So even if interest rates go up, it doesn't break the balance sheet. They've got stable earnings growth. They do grow their earnings, and they grow them in a consistent, predictable manner. And they've got a long track record of growing both their earnings and growing their dividends. And so having those sorts of characteristics, looking for businesses with those sorts of characteristics and investing in them, tends to build you a portfolio that doesn't fall off a cliff when somebody comes out and says, oh, right, we're going to whack 124% tariffs on country X or whatever the next crisis is going to be.
I agree with you, mate.
Well, I'm glad. So the types of business we're looking at, I paused there in case Peter wanted to interject. The types
no,
of business.
No, mate, I'm just going with the flow. I'm just letting you flow, mate. Just go for it.
I'm going to talk about some types of businesses now. So the most obvious one that I could think of that has these sorts of characteristics are actually utilities businesses. Very, very predictable. Think electricity companies, gas companies, water companies. Everybody needs electricity. Everybody needs water, right? The population doesn't change that much. They tend to be monopoly type businesses within an area. The unit prices are heavily regulated, so they can't change all that much. These businesses are very, very, very predictable, very stable. Now, I own a couple of these. I own, and I've talked about them before, you know, Severn Trent and National Grid. One's a water company. One's the operator of our national electricity grid. But those aren't businesses I'm going to talk about on today's podcast. Today, I'm going to talk about a company I don't own. So this is Centrica. CNA is the ticker. And it's a diversified utilities business based in the UK. They have operations that produce oil and gas and supply natural gas and electricity to households and businesses. You probably have heard the name, but you'll probably know it better as British Gas, which was what it, I think, what it originally traded as back in the 1970s. And that brand still exists, but the listed entity is Centrica. And that business is actually the largest residential supplier of natural gas in the whole of Britain. Now, this business has got lots of characteristics of a defensive, resilient type company. It's got a great return on capital employed, 17% on average over the last 10 years. And it actually seemed to have been growing that. Last year, it hit 23%. It's got net borrowing of 2.7 billion, but an income of 19 billion, an operating profit of 1.9 billion. So this could very, very comfortably pay off its debt with its operating profits if it wanted to. It's not going to be paying them off for the next 20 years, for example. It's been going through a bit of a turnaround in the last couple of years. So if you go back to the time when Jeremy Corbyn was in office, I think I actually owned Centrica at the time. I sold out of it. And it really wasn't a very healthy company. There were concerns about revenue. There were concerns about the balance sheet. There were concerns about profit margins. They brought in a new management team and they really started to turn around the business. And the share price has responded. It's been up strongly the last couple of years. After cutting the dividend, they rebased it and resumed payment, now with dividend cover. And it pays a healthy dividend yield of 3.5% with dividend cover of 4x. So it doesn't look like this dividend's going anywhere and there's room to grow it in the future. And actually, from a position of actually having quite a lot of net borrowing, last year it was actually on net cash post the restructure of the business. So it really has transformed the balance sheet. And this is the sort of business where the margins are strong, they're stable, it's a highly regulated industry. Customers that need gas will continue to need gas. They might choose to use a little bit less of it, but no one's going to choose not to put the heating on. It's one of the very last things that you'd go without. And so this is the sort of business that will respond fairly well during times of volatility. And actually, if you look at the recent market crash, the share price has been very, very resilient. It hasn't fallen off a cliff in the way that a lot of other shares did. So any thoughts, Peter?
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
It's one of those stocks, Henry, that we're reliant on. I've always thought it's a bit old and a bit stuffy in the sense of what it does. It's got a monopoly or a duopoly. Oh, no, it's got a monopoly on it, hasn't it, really, on the grid. And also, despite the competition in the supplying of the gas to our homes, it actually, you know, it's got most of the infrastructure to get the gas to us. So it's got a monopoly, mate. So competitively, it could be more efficient, I think. It is defensive. It is one of them that's been around, not going to go anywhere. It's not a stock that excites me at all, Henry. You know, it's like you say, it's defensive. No, but you want a stock that's going to pay your dividend yield. You know, it's not going to be going, waving up and down 10, 30, 40%. It shouldn't be in a position where it has a profit warning of significance, where it's going to see the share price crash significantly. My thing with it, and we've all been consumers of or had something to do with British Gas at some point in our lives, is that it shouldn't be as profitable as it is. Yeah, because it should be looking after its customers a bit more. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Everyone's talking about, well, why is my gas bill going up so high? Well, because this, you know, sometimes we have to offset it and get supply from elsewhere and all the rest of it. And I'm thinking, well, if they've got a monopoly on it, surely they should be able to have a price where they fix their price, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 7 months ahead, 9 months ahead. And therefore, we as consumers can get it as a reasonable price and not in the winter, actually, you know, having
getting
to cough
robbed
up some more.
Yeah.
And I think maybe, and then we've got quite a few people that we follow on Twitter and also on our timeline that we don't follow that have been kicking off about the net zero effect on pricings regarding it. They don't actually call it net zero. They call it something else, but I'm not going to reference that name. And they're all questioning how Mr. Miliband is going about his net zero strategy. They don't call him Mr. Miliband either. They call him something else, but I'm not going to get into that either. So I think there's changes afoot, Henry, regarding Centrica and British Gas going forward. I think it might get a bit more expensive for them to do business because of net zero going forward. But at the moment, who else do we have running the infrastructure? And, you know, having been in place for decades, there's not going to be suddenly somebody coming out using
building
AI
a whole new
to
gas
build
network.
An infrastructure national grid, is there?
Exactly.
So they're going to be here for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years or more, unless we find another, you know, technology or other eating to actually keep ourselves warm and lights on. So solid company. Boring company.
Boring.
Doesn't excite me.
Exactly.
But you know what? If Trump's coming out talking every day and markets moving up and down 15, 20%.
That's more than enough
excitement.
Days,
I don't. Exactly. So to contradict myself, I don't want any excitement. I want to stop that just goes meh and just doesn't move around. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So Centrica could be the one. Could be the one. So yeah. So let's see, mate. Right, I'm going to twist what you're talking about just a little bit, as I like to do. I'm going to talk about the tariffs side of it a little bit, and also the resilience of companies, and also a little bit more resilient. And these two companies, I'm going to throw them both together in one, have both got their issues in the sense of the tariff impacts, they may say, aren't impacting them so much. but there's other impacts that are going to impact them quite significantly, or they're already talking about. And these two companies are two retail companies, two large behemoths in the UK space. And the reason why I'm talking about these two companies, Tesco's and Sainsbury's, is because I'm looking at all the tariffs noise and it's just throwing all the stocks all around, and it's thrown, you know, Sainsbury's and Tesco's around a little bit. However, they've said historically, prior to and during, yeah, that, you know what, we get most of our resources, groceries, food stuff, and so on and so forth, mainly from Europe. Some of the fruit comes far overseas and all the rest of it. But a lot of the goods that they bring in are from the UK and from Europe. So there's less stuff that actually comes from the US. So they shouldn't be impacted that much. Of course, there's stuff they get from the US regarding products, brands, fruits, and so on and so forth, but less so, right? You'll always find a product there saying made in America, right? Or South America, for that instance. So you've got the largest one we've got is Tesco's, right? And a substantial portion of its revenues are from its domestic operations. Yeah. And it recently said that its impact from tariffs will be relatively small, as the company sources it from UK suppliers, and this should help mitigate the effects of international trade restrictions, okay? However, they've been vocal regarding the business rates and employer rates, which is what I want to talk about, okay? The main issue facing Tesco's, right, and this started from, I think it was the beginning of April, is the new ruling regarding the NIC contributions, Henry. This is the same applies to Sainsbury's as well, right? And we're wanting resilient companies. We're trying to, you know, avoid all the different grief that's going on with the tariffs. So we've got to have a look at what other stuff could impact them, right? So when I'm saying, oh, Trump, there's other stuff going on internally in the UK that's impacting them. So Tesco's is facing a significant financial issue regarding employer national insurance contributions. Listen to this figure, Henry. This is make you think, right? The company expects an additional £235 million in costs annually. Over the next 4 years, Tesco's total national insurance bill could rise to £1 billion.
No.
So if you're holding Tesco shares and you're looking at what their profitability has been over the last 4 years, if you're dividing 250 million on average over 4 years and putting that X against what they said profitability wise, they are, sorry, 250 million, sorry, against what their profitability was, they could be quaking over the next 4 years from the tariffs being small, but the actual NIC contributions being significantly higher.
Oh. Yeah?
And that doesn't take, Henry, the increase in costs for the wages for their employees either. Yeah? So I'm saying, look for resilient companies. This is two, which I think, you know what? They get all their profits, or most of their profits, from the UK. Tesco's and Sainsbury's should be safe. And you know what? The share price is relatively low and it pays nice yield. I'll buy Tesco's and Sainsbury's and you know, just snooze this out. But, ladies and gents, $235 annually could rise to $1 billion over the next 4 years. Try and look at the number for Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's have said they expect an additional 140 million in costs annually from employee national insurance contributions. So watch out. Yeah. So the rate's gone from 13.8% to 15%. Another burden.
That is unbelievable. I mean, when you put us on a global stage, and we are on a global stage, the cost of employing British staff is getting completely out of hand. I mean, you've got the similar problem in America, because some American industries now pay three or four times what British ones do. And there's an awful lot of big American multinationals that are coming over to the UK. They're setting up in Ireland, poaching staff from London, because you can hire them on half the price and still give us an enormous uplift compared to what you get from a British company.
Absolutely. I think I read something somewhere. So whatever $25 is equivalent to UK pounds, right? Mm. and I'm going to say round it off a little bit and say $25 is £20. Someone will correct me and give me the exact figures, please. Right, let's say it's $25, £20, right? There are ancillary workers within McDonald's US that are earning there or thereabouts towards $25 an hour. Right? So you imagine if the McDonald's in the UK was paying their basic staff 20 quid an hour. Some nurses aren't earning that over doing a 60-hour week, mate.
Yeah. It's just out of all proportion. It's out of all proportion. Yeah. I don't think on the national insurance thing, I don't think this is the last we've heard of this. I think there is going to be a U-turn at some point, because I think we're going to see an almighty crunch in the jobs market. And I think the government's going to have to look at what's causing it. And it's right there in flashing lights.
Absolutely. My concern regarding both these companies is that the costs that are increasing for them in ICE, et cetera, right? Business rates, et cetera. They're going to try and offset that, aren't they, Henry? So for us as consumers, when you go and buy your Nuki Brown, which you like on a Friday night when you come home from work, right? Or your nice leg of lamb when you've got your family coming to visit, yeah? Which I know you had a bit of an issue with the other week, right? You're going to think, well, I bought that really choice bit of lamb chop there last time. It was 30 quid. Why is it suddenly 40 quid for even less than I bought before?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're going to try and pass that on. So they're already saying, Henry, right? Tesco's is looking for 500 million in cost savings. What do you think? That's going to be less jobs and increases in
prices.
And some of their stores, they're probably going to shrink their... What are you going to say?
They'll shrink the ranges. I mean, when you think of retail, it's incredibly people intensive. You've got to ship the goods with people. You've got to offload the pallets with people. You've got to load them into the warehouse with people. You've then got to take them from the warehouse to the shelves with people, do the barcodes, do the inventory with people. And then you've got to man the tills with people.
Mate, now, listen, don't talk about tills, mate. I get frustrated. You know, when you're busy and you look along, there's no one there. There's two tills open.
Our local Sainsbury's, you know, just replaced. We used to have, there were probably about 15 tills. We're down to four.
There you go. Yeah. Cost savings. Buy a bit of kit. Buy a bit of electronics. Scan yourself out.
Yeah.
No staff. Yep. I actually want to speak to a cashier, male or female. Hello, how are you? You're all right? What time you finish? Yeah. Keep up your good work. No. Scan yourself out. Anyway, there we go, mate.
But I like those. I mean, they're good. They're defensive businesses.
But they come with flies, mate.
They do. But where doesn't these days? And this is the thing about a portfolio that's resilient to events. Things are going to happen. You know, don't go into Sainsbury's because national insurance is coming along. But
do your research on it. Do your research on it. It's there. It's cheap enough. But boy, oh boy, we could get sticky. Could get sticky,
yep,
mate.
Yep.
Right. So there are two for you, mate. Anyway.
So sticking on the theme of retail, I've got one which my good friend Faisal is going to be screaming about because he really likes this. He's been talking to me about this for quite a long time. I've not gone near it because it's a business I'm just not that interested in. But it's one that you're going to go, oh, I never even thought about it.
Okay.
The business is Coca-Cola Hellenic Bottling Company, Coca-Cola HBC. The ticker is CCH, and it is the third largest bottling partner in the Coca-Cola ecosystem, selling 2.9 billion unit cases of beverages in 2024. 2.9 billion cases. I'm not sure quite how big a case is, but I presume it's sort of 6 units of whatever. Now, for context, the largest partner in the ecosystem sold about 4 billion cases. And the second largest sold about 3.3 billion. So, you know, you're looking at about 10 billion in total between the top three bottling partners. Now, Coca-Cola is an interesting company in that you have the IP held centrally, and they then license out the rights to use the formula to run your own bottling facility, to bottle the product, ship the product. That's then sold to retailers who have their margin and so on and so forth. So you're not buying shares in Coca-Cola itself. I'm not entirely sure that's a listed entity anymore. I might be wrong in that. But this is just the business that does part of the bottling. Now, it's a very, very defensive product range, you know, soft drinks. Coca-Cola, sugary drinks, it's not particularly expensive. It's a little bit of a luxury, but it's a food good. It's something that people don't want to cut back on when times are bad. And it's very, very diversified across multiple geographies. They've got revenue from Europe, from Africa, and from emerging markets. Now, Coca-Cola HBC has a 13 billion market cap, right? So this is a big, substantial company. It's got weight and revenue to it. And again, a healthy return on capital employed at 17%. It pays a 2.7% yield and is forecast to grow earnings per share at about 14% next year. So they are forecasting strong growth for this business, despite it being in a fairly dull, fairly plodding, fairly ordinary vanilla kind of industry. Now, the only thing I could find which caused me to raise an eyebrow, and I'd be interested to get listeners' thoughts on this one, was the borrowing. Now, borrowing was 1.6 billion in 2021 and seems to have skyrocketed to about 3.9 billion last year. Having said that, the interest cover, when I went and looked on Shareskope, the interest cover is huge. It's like 74 times, but it's very, very erratic. So one year it's 74 times, then it seems to be down at 23, then we're back up at 56, then we're down at 7.4. Now, for context, I'm used to seeing interest cover in the sort of 5 to 10 times range, certainly not 74 times. Now, I'd want to get into the numbers here. Really go and get into the numbers and understand what's causing this swing in interest cover. Because interest cover, for those of you that can't guess by the name, is basically how many times the company can pay its interest based on its earnings. If that figure falls below one, you're likely to have a problem paying back your debt and servicing it. You're likely to have covenant breaches and borrowers calling in the debt. It's really not a good position to be in. So it looks as though it can handle the debt it's got, but the debt's grown rapidly in recent years, and we've got this erratic interest cover. So defensive business, high quality business, but I've got a question mark about the debt.
Yeah, any just thoughts? Here, Henry, that Coca-Cola HBC use a high amount of debt to increase returns. It sounds like they're leveraging their debt. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In the sense of, we'll service that, but we can utilize the debt to actually get better return on invested capital, which, as you've probably looked on Shareskope, you see that their ROI or ROCE, return on capital invested, is quite good. It's quite meaty.
Yeah.
But yeah, you've got to, I mean, if we get a recession and that cash flow doesn't then come in and they don't do, what did you say there earlier? 2.9 billion, sorry. And suddenly it goes down 10% and the revenues drop, then servicing what that happens? Debt then becomes difficult, doesn't it?
See, the interesting thing is they've also built up their cash balance. So their cash balance has skyrocketed at the same time as their debt. So again, there was a lot going on there that made me think, really interesting company that, again, you probably haven't thought about investing in. It's a brand name that you know, but, and again, how that compares to the other two bottling names I mentioned. So there's the one in Latin America, and I forget what the other one's called, but it serves Europe, Southeast Asia, and the South Pacific. How the finances compare to those two entities, I'm not sure, but you can probably go away. You know, if you've got something like Shareskope, you can go away, plug in the figures, go and have a look and compare them.
Yeah. There is a thought, Henry, and this is a consideration to have. And I know you hate debt, so you're going to look at me with bemusement when I say this, right? But there is a thought when these larger companies do that, and the one that I've hated forever with regards to what they did with management is Vodafone, and they're still paying off debt X amount decades later. So the interest payments and debt are typically tax deductible, yeah? which can significantly reduce the taxable income and overall tax liability for companies. Yeah. So this is accountant speak for let's flex, you know, the balance sheet. But you and I will want a clean sort of statement regarding companies. You've got the cash hoard going up, but you've got the debt indebtedness going up. That doesn't, you know, we're sitting there scratching our heads going, why? Yeah. So maybe they're using the cash and the indebtedness to leverage what they're doing, to expand their reach, to get from number three to number two. But I want a cleaner balance sheet than that. You know, I don't want to see cash sitting on the balance sheet when you could be reducing your debt. I really don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or even worse, they haven't got the cash, got the indebtedness, and they're paying dividends, chunky dividends. I'm thinking, just clear the debt.
Yeah. And that's, you know, generally speaking, that's my preference as well.
Mm.
But to come back to this idea of something that is resilient, again, if you look at one of the things I went and did off the back of seeing this debt pile, was go and look at the credit rating. It is actually an investment grade credit rating. I think it's got a triple B when I looked, which is just above, just over the line for investment grade, but it's a stable outlook. And again, this is something that I don't hear investors talking about a lot, but you've got the credit rating agencies, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, Fitch.
Yeah.
They have independent teams of analysts looking at companies, writing reports, trying to see how stable the outlook is, what the future prospects are. You've not just got equity analysts looking at the equity, you've got debt analysts looking at the company as well. And sometimes this is another source of information from another lens. Because your bondholders, the people that have lent the company money, they want to get it back. And so going away and looking at the Moody's report or the Standard & Poor's report actually can be a good way of getting another lens that sometimes is a lot more conservative than a bullish equity analyst going, oh, it's going to go to the moon.
Yeah. Very, very good point. Very well made, mate. Interestingly enough, I just pulled up the chart by ShareScope here, Henry. For Coca-Cola HBC, ticker symbol CCH. Remarkably, it's sitting at a 52-week high here, Henry.
Exactly.
Yeah. So some resilience being shown there regarding it. Market cap 13.2 nearly billion in price. And I'm always interested here. I'm just going to go to the CAGR, mate. Just bear with me a second. I thought the total returns are for 1 year. Now. You didn't mention this, did you? Henry. 53.95% return over the total returns over the past 12 months, mate. 53. You know, I love stocks that don't get ramped, don't get talked about, just get ignored, but smash all the noise, whilst all the other stocks that are being ramped just get absolutely mullered. 3-year annualized returns, Henry. 34.3.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
And this is the thing. So my friend Faisal has been telling me about this.
Bear with me. I'm going 5-year annualized. Respectable 14.6 5-year total annualized returns. And 10, we're doing 10? 12.2. That's absolutely awesome numbers. 10-year CAGR of 12%. I take that all day long, mate. That is amazing. That is resilient, to say the least. Is tariffs going to impact that, Henry, or not? What do you think? What are you thinking?
The European company selling into Europe doesn't have anything to do with the US.
Yeah. Where do they get the bottles from? Where are the bottles made? Where are they getting
manufactured in the UK?
Raw materials for
bottles? manufactured in Europe, as far as I'm aware. All European.
Insulated.
I'm not 100% certain on that, so you might catch me out there. But as far as I'm aware, those independent entities are independent.
Because something you said there earlier, there's another 3 or 4 entities that do the bottling for Coca-Cola. They own the trademark. So if I'm getting this in my head, this is me catching up now. X, Y, and Z have got that portion of the globe, that they've got the bit for Europe.
Yeah.
So all of their resources they build, bring in and sort out in Europe. I've missed this.
And
Mate.
also, if you think about it, it's actually an American
late,
export. It's actually an American export because I suspect the IP is owned by Coca-Cola AG or whatever it is, or AB, who are the US firm exporting the IP to the bottling business, who generate revenue and pay fees back to the US.
Yep.
So it's not an export from Europe to the US. It's an export from the US to Europe.
Oh, dear. I am 10 years late on this one, mate. Oh, gosh.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the TWINPEETS promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
So there you go. Mind blown. I've broken Peter, ladies and gents.
Oh, dear. No, you've not mind blown. You've upset me. You've upset me because I've missed it for 10 years, mate, without going. And that's, I'm always talking about, do your research. I've looked at that, and I've never gone deep into it. I'm going, right, let me have a really good. And I didn't know. Well, clearly not even the basics on it, mate. Staggering. Anyway, good call that one, Henry. Good call. Resilient. Sitting, despite all that noise over the last 2 weeks, it's sitting there, it's 52-week guy going, didn't touch me.
And this is the thing. If you look at both Centrica and Coca-Cola, they are at 52-week highs. They've not shifted. And this is what I mean about building a portfolio that resists events. It doesn't get pulled around all over the place by the latest headlines. It's good businesses doing good things, and the owners of those businesses aren't there to trade them. They're there to own them for the long term. That's the sort of company you want in your portfolio. Well, certainly the sort of company I want in mine.
Yeah, you're spot on, mate. Spot on. Really good call that one, Henry. Really good call. I don't mind you upsetting me when you upset me like that. Yeah. Right. Okay. I'm going to throw another two at you here, Henry, in quick succession.
Go on. I've got the catchers.
One I'm going to just touch on briefly. Again, I'm using the same sort of discussion here about tariffs. Did they impact it? And what's going on for them within the UK? Because I'm trying to find companies within the UK, again, for you guys and ladies to consider to look at that may have less of an impact from tariffs, but they've got their own stuff going on. And this is one of our largest banks, Henry. And we said, I think it was Phil probably said to us a while back, if you're looking at prosperity of a country, have a look at how well the banks are doing. Yeah. And historically, this bank has been through all kinds of flux, navigated it in some ways independently, and other ways have been coerced by various different governments to do certain things for the greater good, allegedly. I'm talking about a leading UK-based bank that primarily serves customers within the country of the United Kingdom. And Henry, we are looking at Lloyds Banking Group.
Oh, Lloyds. Oh,
yep.
Broke my heart for so many years and I don't own it anymore.
Right. It's been a bit of a, you know, a difficult sort of company to hold, mate. But they're basically saying that it has been impacted by recent tariffs, but the impact is mostly indirect. Since Lloyds is a UK-focused bank, it does not have significant operations in the US, meaning that tariffs do not directly affect its business. However, they are secondary effects. Always looking for second-order effects regarding business. You should always look at market volatility, share prices fluctuate due to concerns about global trade tensions, liquidity, people pulling things and drawdowns and getting concerns and pulling money out of the bank, stuffing it underneath the mattresses. Banks are always impacted when there's volatility in the markets. And because of the volatility in the markets, UK exports will fluctuate, business confidence goes down and declines, and that impacts Lloyd's corporate clients, the larger behemoths as well. And then you've got companies that are exposed to the US, yeah, not Lloyd's, the businesses that do business with Lloyd's that are exposed to the US, what happens to them? They might start to struggle. They potentially increase their bad debts with Lloyd's. They don't make repayments on the loans that they've got themselves exposed to Lloyd's. Some of the bills that they've got via Lloyd's, they don't pay, and so on and so forth. The knock-on effect from larger companies to smaller companies to SMEs to mom-and-pop shops. The line is like a property chain, all impacted because the larger person starts to say, well, I'm not paying them now because I've got difficulties. Instead of paying them every 50 days, I'm going to make it 60 days. Not 60 days, I'm going to make it 90 days. And before you know it, the domino starts, and so on and so forth. So what did I touch on last time, Henry? I was talking about the impact of national insurance. Same thing with Lloyd's here, right? And Lloyd's is saying it's facing higher costs due to the recent increases in national insurance from the rate of 13.8 to 15. And the threshold has gone from £5,000 to £9,100 down to two. So it's earlier that people have to, the increase is impacting them. And they're basically saying that these changes to NIC, Henry, could increase and force them to have higher operational expenses, which could lead to them having to cover employee-related costs. So that's going to impact their profitability potentially. And what does that mean? Profitability for banks. What's the first thing that banks do when profitability gets increased? They reduce their headcount. Yeah, the burden of employees. Yeah, that's what they actually call it, the burden of employees. And they get rid of them, reducing staff. Or what would have been a pay rise because Henry's worked so hard and he's like, oh, I smashed it there this 12 months. I brought in all this money. I'm sorry, Henry, you're not getting a bonus this year. By the way, I'm just interjecting. Did you hear the story about HSBC bankers? And I did pronounce that right, ladies and gentlemen.
I did.
They were due to get a bonus.
Oh, don't.
And either the night before or the day before, they turned around and said, X, Y, and Z, you're fired.
It was the day before.
Quite a lot of them.
It was the day before bonuses the day were due before. To be paid.
Can you imagine that?
I think that's what they call soulless.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
But this is the thing, you know, and I again, to go off on a bit of a tangent here, but know who you're doing business with. Your bank, your if you work for a massive corporate conglomerate, they don't love you. They don't even know who you are. You're a name on a balance sheet somewhere. You're a name on an Excel spreadsheet. And one day, some guy called the chief financial officer could just come along and he could wipe you off the balance sheet. And he won't even pause to think about it because they've got 100,000 employees and you are anonymous employee number 56,033. You know?
Staggering, mate.
And as long as you understand that's what the relationship is, like with your employer, I don't see there's anything wrong with that. But it's when people don't realize that's what the relationship is, you know. But that is just heartless. The day heartless. Before bonus day. I don't often have sympathy for bankers, yeah. But geez.
Yeah.
It's a support group.
It's not just a case of, oh, by the way, guys, you know, stuff has happened, you know, tariffs are kicking off and whatever the reason was they found. Not only are you not getting your bonus, which some people can deal with, and you know what? Yeah, all right, I can see what's going on here. The situation's bad and therefore you're going to not give us the bonus. I can deal with that for 12 months. I'll make it up next year, whatever. But to then get fired as well. In a situation where all manner of different things are going on, I can't see a load of advertisements for jobs in banking right now. You know, Lloyd's advertising for loads of jobs, HSBC. I don't see it anywhere.
Certainly, when you think about the scale of jobs that will have been lost, we'll be talking like 15,000 people in the same geographic area, all with the same job titles.
All looking for the jobs.
You know, yeah, the local employers, there's probably like four or five of a similar scale. They can't absorb them all.
Absolutely. So let me just finish with Lloyd's. Let me just see what we've got here. It's going to have nowhere near the same sort of numbers that you had, Henry, for Coca-Cola Olenek. Sorry. So I'm looking at 1 year total returns. Oh, not too bad, because it had been doing well prior to the Orange Swan event. Up, total returns of 41%, mate. Yeah, Lloyd's quietly squeezed up there. 41% over the last 12 months total returns. 3 year annual returns, 19.66. Not too bad there, not too shabby. 5 year, 20% over the past 5 years, given how low it went. And it was paying quite a chunky dividend as well. Yeah. 10 year annualized. This is where it gets tricky now, including dividends. Henry, are you ready for this? 1.5.
Oh.
So think about inflation eating away that pound. Yeah. That is a nothing return.
Exactly.
Over the last 10 years, that packet of crisps that you like, or the Nuki Brown that you like, has gone up in how much in price over the last 10 years? Doubled, mainly, possibly, yeah, in price. Not going to pay that with the 1.5 increase over the last 10 years.
I mean,
pound,
to be fair, the amount of Nuki Brown I drink, I really think the brewery ought to be subsidising me. But, you know, that's a conversation for another episode, I think.
We can plug that another time. We can plug that. But I must give a shout out, folks, to our wonderful friends. I've not done this for ages, and I keep forgetting. And the weather's coming out now. The weather's been nice. And we're coming up to Easter. And we're coming up to some bank holidays in May. If you are wanting to expand your taste buds of a variety of different ales, okay, visit www.powdermonkeybrewing.com. Select your different beers and other gifts that you want to send to friends and family. And enter the code TWINPEETS. And get a 10% discount off. Okay. I know Henry's already used that in the past, but
many times. You know, many times. It's well worth it, guys. I mean, and not only that, but if you can find some excuse to go and chat to the team, please do, because they're actually all really, really nice. They're really helpful. Mike is a fantastic chap. The whole team down there are. So yeah. I'll come up with any old excuse just to drop them a line and be like, hi.
Yeah. We're gonna have to make an excuse to go down to Gosport, mate, at some point when it's nice, and just have a little chill out and a few beers in the sunshine. We'll have to do that as a proper little Twin Peaks on a little
Beats on tour.
yeah, not on tour, but you know, have a little soiree. Right, I've digressed, haven't I? I need to get back to my other one that I was going to mention. Other one here, another British UK focused sort of company, Henry, right? BT Group. Yeah?
Oh.
Another one. Pink. No, don't groan. I actually own this one. I'm gonna skim over it very, very quickly. So don't groan too long.
Condolences.
Right? And again, they've been tweaking things a little bit and have been adjusting their pricing structure in response to economic pressures, including tariffs and regulatory changes. The company has introduced a new pricing model that moves away from inflation-linked increases and instead provides customers with a fixed price adjustments in pounds and pence. And this is aligned with Ofcom and all the rest of it. They've additionally acknowledged rising costs, including tariffs, that have influenced their annual price changes. And they're obviously got a lot of debt going on, got pressures from other people wanting to buy stakes in the company. And they're looking at all the different bits and pieces regarding the company. I'm just waiting for them to spin off, you know, the infrastructure side of it, and then that's the way they get sorted out. But hey ho, I don't know when that's coming. They've been talking about it for absolutely years, so let's see what happens there. They've got the other monopoly that Centrica have not got. Yeah Okay, we'll see. But they're saying, Henry, regarding employee costs, again we're going back to NIC costs, that they're facing £100 million in additional costs due to the recent increases in employer national insurance contributions.
That's nothing. They should try being Tesco with a billion.
Well, there you go. The company has stated that 70 to 75% of this increase is due to national insurance changes. To offset these rising costs, BT is implementing several strategies, including price adjustments, we've talked about, cost-cutting measures. Here we go, as I said to you before. BT has already cut 2,000 jobs as part of a broader plan to reduce its expenses. Yeah. Increasing automation, again, means less people. So it's investing in artificial intelligence to improve efficiency and productivity. BT CEO Alison Kirby has emphasized that the company will go harder and faster with cost-saving initiatives to counter these financial pressures. Yeah, we'll see that when we come. We'll see that when it comes, mate, because all I know is that, you know, despite, you know, barely using the telephone here and living on our mobiles, you know, the cost of having just a landline in the house, it just goes up every year. I'm like, I don't use it.
I can't remember the last time I even saw a landline phone.
Well, we've still got a landline, mate, and an old-style phone. I've kept this really old-style phone as well.
No,
there's two. Listen, there's two people that have to ring us on, will not ring us any other way, and that's the boss's dad, yeah, and one of my uncles rings me up, and he never used a mobile. And it's like he rings me up. It's like back in the day when Lenny Henry used to do.
Does he think the FBI are listening in on it or something? I mean,
only rings the landline, and sometimes I hear it going in the afternoon. I'm thinking, oh, that's another, you know.
My TV's broken, Pete. My TV's broken. It's upside down. Exactly. Do something.
And was that Peter? You've not picked up again. I'll ring you back another time. I'm thinking, oh, I need to ring him back now. And he just wants to just have a chat. Bless him. But you know, yeah. BT, just another two for you, Henry. I've got one more after this. I'm going to throw at you. But those two, if you had to choose between BT and Lloyds, Henry, a bank or telecommunications, you have to pick one of them. Which one would you pick? You can't say neither. Have you frozen, Henry?
There we go. I'm back.
You're back. I was asking if you had to choose between one of those, BT or Lloyds. If you had to pick
Lloyds,
one, which one would you pick?
Lloyds easily. Lloyds every day of the week. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okie dokie. Right. I'm just going to throw in here quickly before you go back to that, Henry, and you do your next bit. I'm going to throw in because given the fact we did a brilliant Master Investor show and we've celebrated our 150th pod, I just wanted to ask you lovely people from wherever you are in the world as to whether or not you would be kind enough to visit www.justgiving.com and look up the Twin Peaks Investing Charity Challenge 2025 and kindly make a donation that will support the Memphis charity that supports lots of different age groups of children and young adults with a variety of different disabilities, support them regarding the services that we provide across Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland. We're going to be doing some events throughout Easter as well for our young people. I'm going collecting some Easter eggs tomorrow. And I'm going to be taking those to Memphis and then we're going to give those out over Easter. And I'm also taking them to the Wigston Foxes. A big shout out to Leanne, the manager there of, I think it's 7 teams we've got now, all the way up to adults. And we're going to be delivering some eggs for, not the adults, the children that play for Wigston Foxes, as well as the children that are visiting Memphis over the Easter break. So if you can make a donation, please make a donation. On the Just Giving page for Twin Peaks. And we'd love to see that total rise from what is currently 1,657. We're 33% of the way there for our initial target of 5,000. And that's from 16 supporters, including two of them, which are Henry and I. Okay, Henry, go for it, mate. Where do you want to go next?
Well, I was going to say, actually, I'd like to just sort of have a bit of a recap now, I think. So we've talked a little bit about some utilities firms. We've talked a bit about some banks. We've talked a bit about tariffs. And I wanted to talk about the characteristics that these businesses have, again, just to underline how it is we've gone and picked these up. So there are a few things that certainly I look at when I'm looking for resilient type businesses. Return on capital employed, I keep coming back to this. If you listen to the 150th episode, it was a major plank of what we were talking about. I like to look for a 10-year average of at least 10% return on capital employed, demonstrating capital efficiency by the business. I like to see a healthy operating margin, at least 10%, again, over a long period of time. Consistent profitability. I want to see positive free cash flow per share. And I want to see, if possible, I want to see that in the short term, but also over 3, 4, 5 years, avoiding one-off spikes because you can do all sorts of shenanigans with your finances to give you free cash flow in 1 year that then collapses in the next. On the balance sheet, again, we don't want businesses that are highly levered. And if the businesses have debt, they will respond to interest rate changes. And interest rate changes can be caused by economic shocks and world events. So if they've got debt, we don't want a lot of it. And we want interest cover, high interest cover, at least 5 times. Earnings should be covering your interest payments. Really, I want to be seeing net cash companies, companies with cash on the balance sheet, more cash than they've got debt. And again, these businesses don't tend to respond all that much to interest rate rises because the market knows if interest rates shoot up, the company can simply pay off the debt. And finally, I like to see some sort of measure of shareholder returns. I like to see a management team that is responding to the needs of me as a shareholder over the long term. So a dividend of some description is good. 3, 4, 5% is typically what I'm looking for. But more importantly, I want to be investing in companies with a covered dividend. So earnings of at least 1.5 times what they're paying out as a dividend. And again, these businesses don't tend to respond all that sharply to volatility because the market knows no matter what happens, this dividend's covered. It's not going to get cut. And again, you want to see that dividend being grown. You want a compound average growth rate, a positive compound average growth rate of the dividend per share over 4, 5, 6, 7 years. You want a long track record in growing this dividend. And these sorts of characteristics together start to demonstrate a business that is resilient, it's stable, it's growing, it's got a good track record. And so when the market becomes more volatile, investors either don't dump the shares or they dump all the shares and move into companies like this. And this means that when you have events, like the tariff wars that have just kicked off, companies like Centrica, the share price actually continues to climb. Companies like Coca-Cola, HBC, again, the share price continues to climb. They don't crater. So where some companies, you're sitting there going, oh, geez, I'm down, 10% in a day. With these, you'd probably have been up on the day. And so this is the real benefit of filling your portfolio with quality businesses, not trying to respond to the news as it occurs, and having a really, really long-term view and a long-term mindset as to what you're trying to build with your portfolio, thinking more about 5 years, 10 years, 15 years' time, and less about 5 months,
Very well said there, eloquently said, Henry. I'm going to talk about this one stock, if I may, and see if it
One
fits
more.
your
Go.
metrics. Right, if you can pull up, if you've not got it open already, ShareScope for me. Yeah, if you just dip into that, and then you can start looking to see if you see any red signs on there and all the green ones that are positive, because I can't do both at the same time. This company I'm talking about, I own. Okay, so I'm gonna go over it briefly with regards to why I've picked this. And this is one that falls into a UK focused ish sort of business. It does have some overseas revenues, obviously, given what it does. But it's also going to face the issues regarding NICs, I must say that. And therefore it's going to be impacted by tariffs as well, because the bonds that they're involved in the banking and the insurance side are impacted by the tariffs and so on and so on and so on and so forth. And the knock-on regarding that is what it's all about. But the company I'm talking about is Legal & General, Henry. Yeah.
I own
So if you
that as
whack,
well, to be fair.
yeah. So you, well, there you go. So whack that in there. And the reason why I'm saying this particular company is because it's due to go ex-dividend next week. I think it's on the 24th or there thereabouts, next Thursday. And the share price got absolutely smothered in the tariff noise the last week or so. It's bouncing back as we speak. It's closed up at 243 today. The yield on it at this particular price is 8.65. The dividend that's due on it next week, going ex dividend, is 15 pence, 15.3 pence per share. You could have picked it up earlier this week at around last week, sorry, at £2.15, if not sub that intraday. It's essentially an asset management firm in the financial services sector, in the banking space, in the insurance space, in the investment space, in this pension space. So everything related to bonds can impact this company. But the reason why I'm raising it with you is A, with a quick spin on the dividend next week, and B, because of the resilience that it's shown. And I suspect with regards to the sum of the parts that they are going to be doing something quite another additional thing majorly in the next 6 to 18 months that's going to be accretive regarding value, not just what they've talked about regarding return of investments to shareholders. But I've got a feeling that they're sitting there, and I suspect that they're vulnerable. Yeah, they've got a lot of cash sitting on the balance sheet, and that's why I think they've got some stuff going on there, Henry, that I think it's one to watch out on. Yeah. So other than their balance sheet liabilities, I think there's some opportunities there, but I'm not going to go on too long about it because I'll be accused of ramping something I own. Right, Henry, you're looking at the share scope sheets there. Is there any red on there that you're going, uh-uh?
There is. There's lots. And this comes back to understanding balance sheets. You know, it's too much to cover in the few minutes we have left. But the first thing that you will see is that this has dividend cover of 0.1%. Dividend is totally uncovered here, according to ShareScope. You've got a huge drop-off in turnover forecast, nearly 50% next year. Again, who knows what's going to cause that one? You've got a negative free cash flow margin. So there's red all over the board. And this is where understanding what's going on with the balance sheet of an insurer is critical, because those red signs, they're factually correct. ShareScope's not lying to you. But the story is more complex than that.
Yes,
you know, there are issues you've got to look at, like the quality of the assets. You know, what return are they getting on their assets over time? Are they getting a good return on equity? You know, historically, they've been at about the 15% mark. Very, very high quality business. And again, what's going on with their claims ratio? Because don't forget, you've described them as an asset manager, but they're actually a life insurer. So yes, they take insurance premiums, they invest those, and then they do have to pay out on policies at some point. What's going on with those? You know, what do you think happened during COVID when death rates spiked suddenly out of nowhere? Do you think their claims rate went up or down? Do you think that might have impacted their dividend cover or not? These are the sorts of questions you've got to ask yourself when you're looking at an insurer. It's not as simple as looking at something like a retailer. And again, it's been an unloved business in the sense that it is cheap. But it's also been a resilient business in that a lot of companies have declined massively in this space. Legal & General hasn't. And it's continued to pay out a chunky dividend. And to me, that says that the shareholders aren't that unhappy with it.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable assumption, Henry. It's a reasonable one. Lots of red opportunities abound for them to correct that. But it's been one of those sort of like, it's one of them sort of companies, Henry, where you want to just shake them, say, look, come on, a bit like BT, they've been around forever, you know, and you just want to shake them up and say, look, ladies, gents, board, come on, you can do much better than you have done, you know. And whether it be M&A or activism or whatever, they're going to have to change their tack and be far more efficient going forward. And therefore, that there lies the opportunity of efficiency going forward. And again, they've got lots of employees. So if it's not the insurance increases for an IC, then let's see what impacts them to actually shake them up a little bit. Yeah. But there you go. That's me done. Did you want to add anything else stock-wise? I think that's it for me on the stocks.
Yeah, I think that is it for me on the stocks. All I would say is a huge thank you again to everybody that came to see us at the Master Investor Show. Thank you to everybody that subscribed to my blog, The Ethical Entrepreneur, off the back of the show, that wrote to me. I've had some really, really lovely notes and emails over the last week or two, which has been lovely. And thank you to everybody that's continued to support the podcast. You know, it's a labor of love. It's something that I think both Peter and I really enjoy doing. We love producing the show. It's a huge highlight of my week. And we've got lots more episodes to come. I'm looking forward to being here in episode 300. So when Peter's here with his Zimmer frame, taking his teeth out.
Yeah, Henry might be here, folks, but I won't be here for 300, mate. Henry, it'll be called the Two Henrys podcast. That's what it'll be called. Yeah, you and Faisal can do that. You know, exactly. Episode 300, mate. Oh my gosh, that's like 6 years away, Henry.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Scary thought.
You'll be a young pup and I don't know where I'll be, mate. I'll be coming in going, hello, my dears. Hello, my dears.
Yeah. Oh, with your fossilized landline telephone. Henry, I can't work the phone. That's because he's not plugged in.
Absolutely. No, going to close with psychology, folks. As I said at the beginning, the most important part of investing really has always been about being resilient and navigating the market. And being able to compound your returns over a 3, 5, 30-year period. We had 2 weeks, and we could have more further 2 weeks of flux, not just from President Donald Trump, but from other different spheres that will impact the markets. And unfortunately, over the next 1 month, 1 year, 5 years, there'll be other times, as Henry pointed out, where the market gets a nosebleed. But the most important thing to do is to stay focused on your long-term investing and your long-term investing goals. And as I said to Henry at the very beginning of this podcast, before we started going on air, remember the mantra, this too shall pass. And that's how we're going to close the podcast. Okay, ladies and gents, take care. Have a fantastic Easter period. Eat as much chocolate as you can if you can stomach it, and if you're not allergic to it and you're not conscious about getting ill with too much chocolate, because I'll be indulging in some chocolate, lots of chocolate over the next 2 weeks. I'll be handing lots out to lots of children via Memphis as well. And just take care of yourselves. Do what you can for your neighbours. Check in with your neighbours during this nice period of time that we're going to have off, and hopefully spend some quality time with your family, friends and loved ones. And we will look forward to seeing you guys and ladies in 2 weeks' time. This pod should be going out Thursday, Friday-ish. I'm conscious of the bank holiday Friday. So we may actually put this out on Thursday. So if you are listening to it over the Easter break, give us a feedback on YouTube, like, subscribe, and let us know on Spotify and Apple what your thoughts are regarding this pod. And please go and follow Henry on his Ethical Entrepreneur blog/website as well. Some great articles on there that we'll be able to learn and be informed from. Until then, we'll see you end of April. Have an absolutely wonderful time. We'll look forward to your feedback on X and on Blue Sky, LinkedIn, which we're on now as well, and on YouTube. Henry, take care, boss.
Thanks a lot, Peter. You too.
All the very best, ladies and gents. Take care. All the very best. Bye-bye for now. Take care and God bless you all.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.